designated centers. And so what that's doing is some of those properties at those core center intersections, an example is like 122nd and Division, where we have a vision for a new center there, that those zoning, those zones are being changed to something more akin to an urban mixed-use zone instead of being general commercial, which is more of an auto-oriented zone. And so that zoning shift is what's creating those changes in East Portland by designating centers that we expect to be more urban over time. The secondary effect is the drive-through map changes.
And it is difficult to read the color differences, but both the orange and the yellow and the green, all three of those, in some level, allow drive-throughs even under the new zoning. So under this proposed zones map, the only places where it's prohibited are red, and those tend to be these either emerging or existing centers.
Yeah, I think this map's very helpful. The other thing that would be helpful is, Camille, could you open those two shades over there?
You got a drive-through there?
So, Joe, what? Let's take an example of the Fred Meyer.
So here's one, by the way, before we get to Fred Meyer, here's one that no one looks at.
Oh, that one.
So
the
entire block face of that building over there is a drive-through.
What's behind curtain number two?
It's a really ugly drive-through. So one of the inspirations for making it absolutely clear that we shouldn't have drive-throughs in the central city is none of us even remembers that block face is there because we never go there. The entire block face of that building is a drive-through, and in fact, that building's only relationship with the street is a drive-through, and that's why that building was one of the inspirations for our design review code. So that's part of my inspiration here. These don't belong in the central city, but I think they've gotten to a much more sophisticated place with what they're doing in the mixed-use zoning.
Commissioner Novick chose his office precisely so we could have the view of that building.
Yeah, right.
can we go to Fred Meyer for a second? And
yeah.
Just I want to make sure that... So... In my neighborhood, the Fred Meyer has created a quasi-drive-through facility in the parking lot where you can order ahead groceries, come through a lane, and the groceries are delivered to your car. How is that impacted by what's before us?
We're currently discussing some of those. There's also each grocery store is doing it a little differently. Some of them have you park in a spot and push a little button.
Right.
Others actually have a drive aisle. That's a new innovation that our current code doesn't respond well to. Currently, I believe BDS does not consider that a drive-through, and we're trying to figure out what the right code solution to that is. The preliminary inclination is that if it doesn't have a drive aisle and doesn't have a window, that maybe it isn't a drive-through, and because we don't want necessarily discourage the pickup kind of approach.
Well,
so.
In a sense, what they've done is they've taken some existing parking offline and created priority parking for people that are temporarily parked to get groceries.
It's just short-term parking with a pre-order, essentially.
In my experience, the typical person in line is a harried parent with children or an older adult.
Yeah,
so it is not our intent, therefore, to change that. Is that correct?
Those details are going to work out in the mixed use, the details of the code, but it's not our broad intent.
And when you think about the case we've been making about the drive-throughs, that is a facility sort of embedded in a big parking lot. So all the curb cuts and entrances in and out are not changing. It's just circulation within the parking lot. But your classic drive-through is two curb cuts and unexpected sort of traffic in a pedestrian zone more, and that's clearly a Fred Meyer's parking lot. As much as we'd like them to be well designed, it's not a pedestrian zone.
What about a Dutch Brothers that will locate, or you know, another sort of enterprise like that would locate in an existing parking lot? Would that be allowed? And
the Dutch Brothers are typically would be considered a drive-through, as in the sense that they arrange a drive-up and there's a window. And
right, but if they're using an existing underutilized parking lot that already has the curb cuts, does that still
it may be a matter of volume, Commissioner, but a significant portion of drive-through coffee operations sales are taken place by the vehicles driving through. And at Fred Meyer's or a bigger grocery store that can have curbside delivery, it's a parking lot where you're providing this extra sort of amenity of getting groceries to your car. Does that make sense? Like
you have to interact.
I don't know.
I think of many Dutch Brothers. They're in the middle of a big parking lot too. and not just Dutch Brothers, but you know those little micro
espresso
bars. They're located in an existing parking lot, typically of a retail.
My guess is that some percentage of those are using legal grandfathering rights, and some probably just were built without benefit of a permit.
So, Joe, one other.
So, what's the intent under this amendment? Not. Those would not be allowed in the central city?
No, those are clearly – oh, drive-thrus. Those are clearly drive-thrus, yes.
Yeah.
So they would not be allowed in the central city. It's more aggressive but consistent with our policy for a long time in the central city.
Just one other hypothetical so I get it. So what is the – so take the Burgerville that's in the convention center district and it's one of the few drive-thrus that I go to because of my kids. If we have this new policy in place, then what do they have to do in the future?
They would continue to be a non-conforming development, but they would have, depending on how we write the details of the Central City Code, they would have grandfathering rights. So they recently, I think, redeveloped that building, so it's relatively modern, and I think they went through design review and all that.
Right.
So if that happened again, they would continue to have rights to hold that drive-through, but it would be, if it lapsed for a period of years, then they would have to go away.
So this is the technical question. I think I know the answer. I just want to make sure. So if, and I don't want to get too much in the weeds, but my understanding in some of those fast food restaurants is by contract they're required to update their facilities on some basis. So let's say every 10 years you have to update it, and it has to have a new look. Does that trigger a conditional use? Does that trigger something that then puts at risk the drive-through?
In the central city, there's the added layer of design review, which complicates that question. But in general, the two flavors that we talked about are that's part of the discussion. The traditional grandfathering complicates that because you have to keep the drive-through in the same place, and oftentimes you see people kind of building around and modifying their site. With the expanded, more liberal grandfathering that in the orange part of the map, we would be saying as long as you have one, you can rearrange the site and upgrade without that problem.
Mayor, since I know you care very deeply about this issue, the question I'm getting at is, I want to make sure that if someone is grandfathered and they're playing by the rules, they're not discouraged from updating their facility, which we would otherwise hope they would do.
Right. I had that same conversation with some of the property owners involved.
And you know, the Burgerville people are the good guys, generally, and lots of other, in my view, generally. So are you comfortable with your approach that we're not unduly burdening their ability to
I am. Again, we're trying to move generally away from drive-thrus and not create new ones.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, I think this rebuild allowance is actually, in some instances, giving people a little clearer path to continuing their lease and upgrading their building than we have today. So it's not liberalizing the drive-thru policy overall. The overall direction is it's going to be harder to have drive-thrus everywhere.
You can have the drive-through every time you upgrade the facility, and overall, that fast food restaurant has to become more in compliance. But it's just a steady progress for it. It never gets to the point where you couldn't have it.
That's a clarifying point: is you can't make it more out of compliance. If you had one drive lane now, you can't add a second.
This is a technical area, but I just want to make sure if I support this that. Again, let's use Burgerville because it's, I think, better to use a concrete example. And they do have a drive-through next to the convention center. That if they're grandfathered and they otherwise comply with everything else, if at some point they choose to update their facility to modernize it and make it more attractive to the public, it doesn't put at risk their drive-through.
No, not directly. I mean, indirectly, they have to navigate design review and come up with a design that will pass muster, but it doesn't make their facility go away.
Right. It stays a non-conforming use that they have.
The real criticism you could hear from an operator in that circumstance is it just creates a different level of cost and uncertainty?
Typically what we hear is that it adds to uncertainty or brain damage is often how it's described, and then sometimes it can make it difficult to finance upgrades, but for a franchisee like that, that's probably self-financed anyway.
And one last question. In the revision that's before us, the language "and reduce conflicts between automobiles and pedestrians and bicyclists" is redacted. And the purpose of that?
I think we summed it up with the pedestrian-oriented environment, right?
Yeah, there's other policies that deal with that, so we figured that maybe we were
redundant.
It was redundant with other policies in the plan.
Did we ever get any feedback on this from the Portland Commission on Disabilities?
We did. We're in process of doing that. The the Built Environment Subcommittee of the Disability Commission met a few days ago, and we brought this item to them, and they grappled with it. They didn't come to a conclusion. I think some of them were a little split on it,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
They are meeting this Friday again to further discuss it. We communicated to them that your discussion of this policy was, of course, happening right now, and they may not have enough time to fully weigh in at that level, but we were encouraging their feedback in the code development that's through the mixed-use project, that where this is really going to – the details of this will play out.
So the subcommittee on the built environment kind of had different opinions, I guess is what you're saying.
They weren't ready to commit to an opinion
to
yet, but I mean, there were opinions within the members of the committee.
Yeah, right. That's what I meant, not as a committee. Okay.
I think this, I mean, again, I think this is a, I would go farther. I think this is a step in the right direction. You had PBOT staff here quoting Fred Kent yesterday that if you design for the automobile, you get a city designed for the automobile. And if you design for the pedestrian, you get a city designed for the pedestrian. I agree. And we'll get there someday. This gets there a little more in some places and stays and continues our policy about the central city. I think if you look at this map, I think the big changes are places like 82nd and Foster and Sandy, the very streets that we want to make less suburban and more urban. So I think this goes in the right direction. Still possible in some on some parcels, but I think the where the Planning and Sustainability Commission is going is a good balance, and this language tries to support that rather than going, again, as far as I would go, left to my own devices.
And this language deletes the "and corridors," correct?
Correct. I think the concern was that maybe the "and corridors" just covered the entire city, so that from the retail task force and the industry perspective, that was the more aggressive phrase.
And so we had testimony about the east side, central east side that's in the central city, and right, like the Lloyd District is central city.
Yeah, the Lloyd and the Burgerville example cited by Commissioner Frisch is part of the central city.
Right, and so there is the question of do we consider certainly downtown. We don't have any. We don't want any. Prohibit is good. We want that one to go away.
Someday.
As somebody who used to have 3 children under 4, I found drive-through facilities quite handy in the days when I was having to get fast food to get from A to B in short order. So I think there is a place that we can always be pedestrian-oriented. And I actually am interested in the very auto-centered, it used to be a car wash, has now been changed into a Black Rock Cafe in the West Portland Town Center. I see more use from the walk-up window than I do from people driving through it. Maybe
that's
it's just the time of day.
Yeah.
So I like the language that says to support a pedestrian-oriented environment, that may when we're getting these new facilities, there will be the walk-up window.
Exactly.
So the other thing to bear in mind is if you don't have a drive-through, you may have to have more parking. If it is a facility where you're not dining out in style, for instance, at Burger King, that you're just picking up your food. If you can't have a drive-through, then you're going to have to park, and that's going to require more spaces.
Yeah. Well, the other effect of this, and we're spending maybe too much time on this because I think we might be ready, but the other effect of this is about intensity of development. And you mentioned the Burgerville, and that Burgerville should be allowed to continue. Obviously, we're not trying to make them close their drive-through, and if their lease comes up in 10 years, they ought to get to renovate the building and keep it. But you look how underutilized that piece of land is versus the parcel next door with a 6-story apartment building on it, and you realize, as I think is true, that we can't afford to have 1-story development with a drive-through in the central city very many places.
Well, I'll make a bet. that in 10 or 20 years, Burgerville is going to be a property development company, yeah, not a fast food company.
Yeah, exactly.
And their genius is they acquired very attractive lots, yeah, in the city, in, yeah, place like this. And if most of what we're doing is going to make their property more valuable, and the pressures of development are going to...
Yep. Yep. In some cases, we're
Mayor,
making...
I move the motion.
Okay, let's take a vote. Let's see how we're doing. Ready?
I appreciate this discussion because I was, frankly, torn on this one. But based on what I've heard from staff about our intention, particularly the grandfathering and the conversation with the mayor, I'm more comfortable with this approach. What didn't mean to insult anyone about the maps. It's just that with my eyesight, those two maps are indistinguishable. So I just
no. We've had that conversation,
And it's helpful. And so. I could at least tell that there was less green as I went east. Right. So that was helpful to me to kind of get a trend line at least.
He had a smaller city.
I appreciate it.
Holtzman?
Aye.
Novick?
I've gone back and forth on this. Intuitively, I'm all for restricting drive-thrus. My only concern is that we haven't heard, the Portland Commission on Disabilities does not have an answer for us yet, and it seems like the academic research on the value or negative value of drive-thrus for seniors and people with disabilities is rather limited or non-existent. So I came in this morning actually planning to vote no, saying that I think that we can address the issues and the specific zone changes and we don't need to adopt a policy. In the meantime, we can have more communication with seniors and people with disabilities and see if there's more academic research. But I am reassured by the conversation, and it seems to me that if we prohibit drive-through facilities in the central city and limit them in centers and corridors, we can have a conversation with folks, the seniors and folks with mobility disabilities, about how much limiting is appropriate. So in light of that, I will, after changing my mind twice in the course of the past 20 minutes, vote aye.
It's always allowed.
Well, I appreciate this discussion, too, and I remember back to the St. John's Lombard plan when Commissioner Hales was pushing this before, and I was on the Planning Commission exactly at the stage that we consumed more than our lifetime supply of McDonald's, I think, in our family to make sure that we could get to meetings. And indeed, the sky hasn't fallen in St. John's, and I think it has helped create a more pedestrian-oriented environment there, so I support it.
Hales?
Walking around downtown Oslo past the Burger King and the McDonald's with no drive-thrus in the entire city, I knew that this was at least a step in the right direction towards being the best European city in America. Aye.
Mayor, I have to ask, what do they call a quarter pounder with cheese in Oslo?
I have no idea, but I can't pronounce it.
We'll take a number six, please.
That's right, number six. Okay. P23, I move to adopt policy amendment P23.
Second.
Eastern Neighborhood Site Development. So this is the land aggregation requirement.
Could you discuss this a little bit and why we're requiring rather than encouraging here?
My thought behind this was that if we don't require it and it's hard to do, it probably won't happen.
That's
my layperson's explanation. I'll let our planners do a better job than
that. Let me just ask you for clarification. Are we, if the land is in different ownerships, we're going to say, no, you can't develop until your neighbor wants to sell, or are we talking about lots that are in the same ownership?
We're talking about lots that may be in different ownerships, but whether or not you get to do a subdivision until it makes sense.
Yeah, the code details would have to be worked out about whether there were exceptions for isolated sites, but the concept is if you don't have enough properties lined up that are going at once, you would have to wait.
And what? So we would have to specify what is a large enough site.
Right.
All of that has to be specified.
So then you have to be able to develop something. You'd be able to have a single family home on that land.
You'd always get the single family home option because that's not a. But to increase density in a single family zone, you have to go through a land division. There may be also a possibility of having an out through the plan development option, but you would get the rights to build if it was a vacant site, you could always build a house or rebuild your house.
You know, and the issues we're looking at in the multifamily code update project that we're just now starting in East Portland are these kind of issues where their access to them and their location on the site is could absolutely be more integrated into the street and sidewalk network. But the rules that we have now don't lend themselves to being able to accomplish that. Part of it is that we let the sites move forward, even with multifamily development in these very small parcels. A street master plan pushes you towards getting the bones in place and still opening up what will be better multifamily development sites.
The typical poster child is a 60 by 300 lot that where we want to get a street through, but if we ask for a street, we'd take the whole site and just can't get it. So that.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Okay. Other questions about this one? Ready to vote on this one? Okay, let's do.
Fish. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you for the explanation. Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay, we're rolling along here. Parking. Let's see, are these consolidated? Yes, I move to adopt policy amendments P73 and P99 as further refined in Commissioner Fritz's memo dated April 13th.
Second.
Questions about these that have been wordsmithed a bit more?
Is there a, so I just want to play catch up on this. Is there a further compromise reflected in this language since the last hearing?
The language at the bottom of the page under revision, we've reordered the word, we've reordered that sentence essentially.
And I would actually, I would pose P73, and people had some concerns on that that Courtney Duke will relay, and I would like to add to P99 in front of the last sentence where it says provide adequate but not excessive off-street parking where needed. I would feel much more comfortable with seek to provide.
Mayor, just provide. So procedurally.
Okay. We might need to unbundle these.
Let's unbundle them if you don't mind.
All right, I'll move P73.
Yeah.
If I might explain my rationale, and it's unfortunate that most of you don't have the code in front of you, the comprehensive plan. So this is in a policy that looks at what are the purposes of the right of way, and this. Oh, Courtney, do you want to explain?
Courtney, you want
it?
To talk
yeah,
about
I'm just double checking. Sorry, I didn't bring all my paperwork.
Yeah,
so. We just feel that this is related to the design of the streets, or what we said here in the note that Eric wrote with our input, that Chapter 9 already addresses parking and what the street looks like and the street design, and that in the right-of-way where we talk about transportation needs, that parking is considered transportation need. And to further highlight parking, just seems inconsistent with the work that we're doing related to parking and the parking strategies that we're working on around the city.
So thank you for explaining that. So this is in section, which is entitled Public Right-of-Way, and it specifies that the policies under it, so the first one is an interconnected network, and then
right.
Transportation function, utility function, stormwater management function, trees in the right-of-way, community uses, commercial uses. Those are defined as the functions of the right-of-way. And the reason this is important is because in policy 8.48, in this right-of-way vacations, these are the things that you have, that we, the council, and future councils have to consider those particular functions mm-hmm. when they're thinking of should we give up this public right-of-way.
Right.
And so as we heard last week with the University of Portland and in other situations, Commissioner Fish and Commissioner Saltzman will remember the Cactus Jack off of Beaverton-Hillsdale Highway, where there was a little crescent that really wasn't much use as a through street, but it was used for deliveries and for parking, which otherwise would have put the businesses on fronting on Beaverton-Hillsdale out of business because there isn't parking on Beaverton-Hillsdale. So I want future councils to, when and specifically in street vacations, and that's why I believe it has to be in here, that future councils should have to look at whether or not parking is required. So that's why I have this consider, not saying that we're going to, but just consider the need for parking for cars. And I'm open to different language if you think it's too designy. We can take out designing, maybe, but in
well,
street
I'm just wondering
vacations.
Why the definition of transportation function doesn't include parking for you.
I was just about to say that.
So that, or do we, or is there something that we could look at in the transportation function definition that, comma,
including parking
or something? I mean, that, yeah, because we really tried to focus on the bigger functions in terms of connected network, transportation, utility, stormwater, and within those functions, what are we looking at? To me, parking just is included in the transportation function.
I would agree, and I think that the rest of the language is broad enough that if we added specific language about parking, it would seem that we were elevating parking to the status, to godlike status.
As long as it's in, so that it's considered in street vacations, that's my main concern. Yeah. So if we put it, if there's a way, Courtney, to figure out where in 8.38, it doesn't, I don't think there's a comma dash parking, a comma parking that goes in that sentence, but if there's another sentence.
We don't have to do that necessarily this moment, but we should do it before we finish our amendment. So why don't you see, let's set this one over at least for a little while this afternoon, see if you can't come back with language on that one.
That's fine.
Right. Yes. I don't think there's much disagreement about the intent. I get your argument.
And Cuba would agree with that in terms of looking at the street vacations to see how parking is included in that. We just, again, think it's within the transportation function. So
why don't we pass on that one for the moment, but get you to come back in a little bit with maybe some recommended language and see. Okay. Let's see where we are in P99. So I'll withdraw my motion on P73 and make a motion that we adopt P99.
Second.
Okay.
And this is in response to Rose City Park and other neighborhoods that are concerned that as we're adding density, this would allow us, as we did during the Sam Adams administration, to look at division and recognize that not having any parking was required in large multifamily developments was really causing problems. And so that was why I'd like to have this language that says provide adequate but not excessive on-street parking where needed.
Off-street,
off-street parking.
Actually, what I suggested was, and I thought that Commissioner Fritz and I had agreed to this part, provide adequate but not excessive off-street parking where needed, consistent with the preceding practices.
Yes,
and
we did.
That,
you're right.
But to that, I would actually like to add at the beginning of that sentence, seek to, so it's seek to provide, in order to make it clear that that's something we will seek to do, but we're not opening up ourselves up to lawsuits from somebody who say, well, you didn't provide.
All right, so I'll take Commissioner Novick's suggestion as an amendment.
Second.
To the language.
Thank you. We have strive to provide. That was what we had discussed before
I'm
today.
Fine with strive, sir.
Strive instead of seek. All right. Strive is always a good thing. Everyone, Courtney, are you comfortable with that?
Yes.
Yes. And could you, Commissioner, you're right. This doesn't transcribe. Oh, yes, it's down at the bottom. I do have it. So the new amendment for this policy, number 99, is strive to provide adequate but not excessive off-street parking where needed, consistent with the preceding practices.
Okay. Further discussion?
So we're amending now this is the vote on the amendment?
This is the vote. We're actually adopting P99 as reflected in the revision language and adding the words strive to.
So that's a friendly amendment?
Yes.
Okay.
I accept it as such.
Okay. Roll call.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I believe that off-street parking, well, I think we all know that, is a major contributor to the increased cost of construction, therefore increasing cost of affordable housing. And I'm just not sure that not excessive is a very definable standard, so I vote no.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay, we'll come back to P73 a little later, unless you're ready right now, Courtney.
Ooh, look at that.
No.
You're great. I had
one thing we're going to double check is the definition of transportation function that's in the TSP right now. Mm. So that's one thing we're going to look at while we're talking here.
That's smart.
And then I got a note from one of your staff too to look at it. So I'll go back and do a little work. Okay.
That's great. Thank you. All right. Let's take up right-of-way policy P76. I move to adopt policy amendment P76.
Second, and I move the motion.
Any discussion or questions? Okay, roll call.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Wait a minute, this is 76?
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of presupposing on whether we adopt the previous amendments, so I would prefer that we don't. This is saying
that...
Well, if transportation facilities isn't sufficiently inclusive, then...
Right, so...
All right. I'll
we may or may not need another number here, so I would suggest we...
Commissioner Fritz's request for the good of the order. We'll do this both together later.
Thank you.
All right, so I'll move policy amendment P96. Is there a second on that one? That's the transit funding.
Second.
Okay, and so...
Joe, have we had any testimony for or against this?
No. That's what my records say.
We have had some input from TriMet. I don't know if it's a formal testimony.
And so we have refined it with a further amendment, and I'm sorry I didn't give this out before now. So this is we're adding in partnership. So transit funding, consider funding strategies and partnership opportunities that improve access to and equity in transit service, such as raising metro-wide funding to improve service and or decrease or eliminate user fees, fares.
And I would move to delete the words or eliminate, because those words really freak TriMet out, and I think decrease intuitively includes decrease to zero.
And I would argue against that amendment because or is inclusive and it could be decrease or.
Okay, so Commissioner Novick moves to strike the words or eliminate. Is there a second to that?
Second.
Are you ready to vote on that question? I guess I'm not quite ready to vote on that question. I think this, you know, one could argue this doesn't need to be in the comp plan, but one could make that argument about a lot of things that are in the comp plan. So, and I don't generally accept that argument. So what's the effect of this policy provision?
Well, so it's, it's instructions to city in considering, especially in their major project list and the funding of those, to consider our funding strategies. And by the addition of partnership opportunities, it's, I guess, clarified that it's not a funding strategy that's assigned to a single source of funding, be it the city or metro, to accomplish these transit ends. So it's a reminder that this equity in transit service and access to equity is something we need to follow through on in terms of funding strategies as well as just designation of lines on a map. A case in point might be improved transit service on 122nd. What would be the comp plan or even the city's practical function of doing that? With Metro or as Metro in the lead, figuring out how to fund that service or that service expansion is part of being able to deliver it.
Okay. Well, the effect of this wouldn't be to prohibit development absent transit funding?
No.
Right. Okay.
Well, what does the phrase raising Metro-wide funding mean?
I think it's partly to acknowledge the fact that this comprehensive plan depends on a pretty large step forward in the level of transit service throughout the region, and that we have an interest in kind of resolving that in partnership with those agencies. That's how I would read that.
But so would this then require us annually to have a hearing to consider funding strategies for this purpose, or
no.
Is this something that comes up every time there is a transportation issue before us?
No, it's a policy in the comp plan, which means that as you're making land use decisions in the future and as you're looking at major projects that get adopted under the rubric of the comp plan, like the Southwest Corridor, that you are saying it's your policy to raise that question.
Right, but let me pose it slightly differently. The transportation commissioner can come to us and say we need to go to Washington to lobby for more money, we need to go to state to lobby for more money, we need to go to Metro and divide up the pie differently, we need to raise fees, we need to stick TriMet with unfunded mandates. We can do all that. Why are we in this plan prioritizing any particular approach? Why are we identifying these two? Because we are privileging them by mentioning them. The goal we all have, I mean,
it doesn't mention
access to and equity in transit service is a core value that I assume is written in more than one place. Why are we privileging any particular strategy to in furtherance thereof?
Means like raising metro-wide funding.
Or eliminating fees. I mean, in one sense, you could Why do we have to have that to guide that discussion? That those are two of 100 strategies.
Well, well, Commissioner, I'm
asking for to have it clarified. I'm not picking a fight. I just
I'm not sure 100% of the origins of this amendment. However, in reading it, its real focus is on funding strategies to improve equitable access to transit. And I know for that same group of advocates, the user fees and fares and the effect on fare rates is a big issue for equitable transit access advocates as well. So maybe it came from that. I'm not sure.
And it's in order to be able to achieve our land use strategies and indeed our climate action plan, we are going to need to encourage more people to use transit. And so recognizing that user fees are a barrier for some people, this actually would also speak to the youth pass, which this council has supported consistently, that in that case we have eliminated user fees by paying in a different way. I think it's a good policy, and sorry, Commissioner, you had another question?
Does your amendment, Commissioner Fritz, have TriMet support?
It's based on TriMet's input.
What TriMet would prefer to have or eliminated?
I can take that out if that's the key factor, because I take your point, Commissioner Novick, that decrease could be decreased to zero.
All right. So
if we make that change, I will support this.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. So let's take a vote on Commissioner Novick's amendment to remove the words or eliminate.
Could I just accept it as a friendly amendment?
Yeah, you can. Let's do that.
Since right.
The sponsor, we have to get rid of the
sponsor has. Okay, so we're now ready to vote on the revised amendment based on transit TriMet input and with the friendly amendment of removing or eliminate.
Yes.
Okay. Let's vote.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
I'm pleased that now when I ask Commissioner Fish to come lobby Congress or the state for transit money, I'll be able to tell him you have to come with me because it's in the comp plan. Aye.
It's got to move to
I can't miss that.
Thank you, everybody, for your support of this. It's very important to me. Aye.
Hale.
See, it was a trap. Aye. Okay. Let's move on and come back later to the two items we bypassed. Interim congestion standards. I move to incorporate the interim congestion standards as described in item 4 of my April 11th memo into chapter 9 of the comp plan.
Second.
And we have a staff substitution that I'd like to suggest.
Right.
On this.
Good.
And Mayor, maybe an re-explanation would be in order to. Brief re-explanation.
So this doesn't help me. Mayor, I hereby nominate you for policy wonk of the year or maybe decade or century. I have no clue what this means. Could you explain it to me, please?
I think I'm going to let the staff do it because they'll do a better job.
Both the state and the region have standards by which we all are required to measure the success of our transportation system. In policy 9.49, we talk about adopting multimodal standards going forward so that we're not just measuring congestion based on traffic. But our intent was not to completely throw out measuring based on traffic. And in fact, the region and ODOT have regional and state requirements that our comprehensive plan has to reference. And so our request with this amendment, this was a staff-generated amendment to add reference to those regional standards that apply to us so that our comp plan is consistent with the regional plan in that way. They're expressed as interim standards because both the city and the region have the wider policy of broadening in the future to multimodal standards. In the meantime, though, we have to have some standards.
But do we have to have them in the comprehensive plan?
Yes.
Just reference them?
The facilities, one of the functions of the comp plan is to contain our service standards for the various services that are provided. And so this came out of a concern as we were preparing findings for the comprehensive plan that the other service standards had been provided, but we had not provided this. So it's kind of a consistency. There's a part two of this coming as the rest of the TSP moves forward, where there may be an option to have them sit deeper within the TSP so they're not on the in the top level policies, but that's coming to you in the fall, and so I can't put it there yet.
So then every time we change, these numbers change, we have to amend the comprehensive plan?
These numbers haven't changed in the last, haven't changed before.
But they will in the future, right? These are interim thresholds.
Yeah, we're intending to change this, but in the meantime, we need something in the comp plan to be consistent with those regional and state standards.
So maybe the flip side of that is, what happens if we didn't?
It makes our discussion of adequacy of transportation facilities under the new comp plan a little bit challenging, because we'd have no standards to
Eric,
make those findings.
In fairness, this we've been told all along not to get very prescriptive, not to make policy decisions, you know, not to cross a certain line. We now have a page which is, I think, the award winner for violating the admonishment you gave us. And there's a simple way to resolve that, which is just to reference some other to just have a cross reference in the document. That
those don't exist yet in the city's code, so there is no other place to.
Look, what
can it's a temporary. I guess I describe this as a temporary problem, because we're bringing you the comp plan in stages, starting with the top level, and then in the fall we're going to bring you the detailed level, but. As we bring forward the comprehensive plan map, we have to have a way to judge whether that map is consistent with our transportation system. And in the absence of having any standards in the comp plan, we've violated the rule about having some standard to judge that.
Couldn't you have, after number one, I mean, number one is beautifully clear, create a regional congestion management approach, including a market-based system to price or charge for auto trips and parking, better account for the cost of auto trips, and to more efficiently manage the regional system. Couldn't you just add to that, establish interim standards and upgrade them as update them as necessary?
We could, but we need them to exist now so that the current comp plan you're adopting has a basis of evaluating the transportation adequacy.
Can we do that by resolution? Why can't we just bring it as a placeholder resolution?
I understand the reluctance about the specificity of this, but
the current comp plan has a similar level of specificity in this particular topic because of the state law structure and
I think this is required that we have a touchstone for this.
Can you put it in the back with the, you know, with the project lists and such?
What we were thinking of doing is when we bring forward the next phase of this, where the more detailed document is,
we would move where
the other more details are. We would move this into that once it's brought forward, so it doesn't have to sit up with the other high level policies. So that you could be amending this fall. It's sort of a when we bring that phase of the project forward, but we're not quite there yet.
We're caught between a rock and a hard place because we have to have something in there. So you're saying in this one instance, overlook some of the guidance you've given us before, put this in the comp plan with the understanding that we'll be updating it in the future.
Right.
Yeah, with even the direction for us to revisit it in the fall before it goes into effect.
Commissioner Fritz is artfully looking for a way to bury it in the appendix or some way so it doesn't seem as conspicuous, but I get that it has to be in there somehow.
As a general policy issue, I try not to vote on things that I have no clue whether 0.99 or 1.1 are the right numbers. Has the Planning Commission had a solid discussion on this, or somebody else?
No, it's sort of a yes-no question, because the numbers are fixed in state and regional policy, so we actually can't really change them.
Okay, that's comforting.
A number one means that what volume to capacity is a measure of how many cars are on the road over how many cars are able to be on the road by its design. And if the number is over one, it means that it's congested.
Okay. Could you just put it on the screen so that people at home know that I'm not making a big deal out of nothing, that this is why...
It is indeed complicated.
Yes, and I'm glad that we have, there we go, thank you. So I'm glad that we have staff who've worked it through, and I'm especially glad that it's already law that we have to do it anyway.
In a nutshell, what it means is that the 1.1 figure for the central city and certain freeways is an acknowledgement that those we're accepting a greater level of congestion in those areas because we have other priorities, and we have we want the central city to be dense, and there's no way to do that without going above one in terms of the traffic. It's another way of saying what the mayor has said before, that there will be traffic.
Commissioner Novick, can you assure us that you have scrubbed these numbers and can and can authenticate them as, in fact, the standard?
Well, I have to say that I personally would prefer that the numbers be 0.992 and 1.13, but I have to defer to the existing standards. I'm comfortable with them.
All right, let's move.
I move the motion.
Okay, let's take a vote.
Fish.
Aye.
Novick?
Thank you very much for the explanation. Aye.
Fritz.
Yeah, that was a very good explanation, and it is good that we have city staff who are experts in things who help us get stuff done. Thank you. Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay.
And just to clarify, you adopted the amended version that I handed you.
Which also directs you to continue working towards the multimodal performance measures noted in policy 9.48.
Yes.
Please do. All right. Environmental justice, and are these bundled? They are. Partnerships and coordination. Okay, I move to adopt policy amendments P5 and P9.
And if I might, I second, and I'd like to, as a friendly amendment to my amendment, remove the hyphen between African Americans.
Okay,
to be consistent with the other. My understanding is that is the correct.
Can I ask the sponsor a question?
Yes.
In P9, communities of color is defined as including African Americans, and yet in P5, there's a reference to communities of color, but a separate reference to African Americans. So why are you dealing with them differently?
So the Planning and Sustainability Commission chose to add to, as you're correct, Commissioner, I think my preference would have been to just refer to communities of color. The Planning and Sustainability chose to add Native American as called out as separate. And so that got my staff and me and folks in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement thinking about who are some of the most disadvantaged communities. And so that's why we wanted to add African Americans and descendants of immigrants who have been disproportionately impacted. Yes, we recognize that all communities of color and many immigrant and refugee communities have been disadvantaged.
So is the from a drafting point of view, is the worst thing you can say about the drafting here is that it's redundant? Because because communities of color is clearly defined under 2.1.B to include African Americans. So
yes.
is it your intention to essentially state it in the general and in the specific?
Yes, and also to respect the fact that it was important to the Planning and Sustainability Commission to specifically list Native Americans.
So I get the Native American piece, but just the question I would have is, again, if you're pulling African Americans out of communities of color but not similarly highlighting other communities that have a historic disadvantage, how do we argue the one and not the other?
Well, we've had a lot of discussions about this over the past year, including with Planning and Sustainability and within the Diversity and Civic Leadership groups in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. And so with Native Americans called out especially, those are the people who historically lived here and who my ancestors and yours took the land from and committed genocide. When we're looking at other communities that have had particular atrocities committed against them, one of the next, again, historically my ancestors bought people from Africa and made them slaves and brought them here. And, you know, Oregon was founded as a state that was supposedly free, but no person that we now call African American was allowed to live here. Similarly with the internment of the Japanese Americans during the war. And so those are the groups that we were looking at if we are going to call out those who have been even more disadvantaged than others. We hate to get into the oppression Olympics of who is the most disparaged and disadvantaged, but it seems to me that given the Planning Commission's desire to call out Native Americans, that adding these other two categories
was
appropriate.
Clear then, staff. If I were to oppose this amendment, it would just revert to communities of color, which was intended to cover the whole spectrum of communities of color, correct?
The Planning Commission had a similar discussion about whether you have a long list or you use a general term, and in the end, they kind of did a hybrid, which has created this issue. So that was our original intent, was that communities of color cover those terms.
And then the definition section under policy 2.1 makes that clear.
But then, Commissioner, you would still have sovereign tribes and Native Americans called out specifically. And sovereign tribes certainly is recognition of the sovereignty, and we've passed binding city policy on that. But then Native American would still be listed. So that's an alternative that we could, given that Native Americans are listed under communities of color, we could take that out. But it was, as I say, important to that.
Here's my only preference, and this is an issue I care deeply about. We are having a conversation now about trying to understand something that has become more complicated by the addition. That's going to make it more complicated for a future policymaker. So my preference is to keep it as clear and consistent as possible, and therefore I would remove Native American and African American, so that communities of color controls both in P5 and in P9.
I would be willing to support that. If
I think your intent is to be as broad and inclusive as possible.
Yes.
But I just think that a redundancy in this nature raises questions of interpretation that go well beyond what you intend. So I would strike it so that communities of color controls. And I think sovereign tribes are, in fact, different.
Your amendment, Commissioner, is to remove Native American, African Americans, and descendants of immigrants.
Yeah. So that then, which are all defined under communities of color below. So communities of color controls, and that is, in fact, the term of art that we use consistently.
Well, would you delete the whole underlined phrase in 9?
Yes. That's right. I mean, the issue is, do we want to, in the comprehensive plan, recognize that there have been historical atrocities that need to be acknowledged and perhaps reparations made?
I think that each council can decide, as we have done with the Office of Equity, in choosing to begin by prioritizing certain communities and certain causes. I think that becomes a policy decision. But I think I would prefer in P5 to have communities of color control. And I think the definition in P9, including those blah, 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 is helpful. So I would just make the deletion in P5 and keep P9 as it is, as amended.
Okay, so Commissioner Fish moves that amendment.
Let's deal with them separately.
Let's do them one at a time. Let's do P5.
I think that's are you comfortable with that, Commissioner Novick?
I'd like you to go over the two things again. I think generally I am.
Well, let's take them apart, let's do them one at a time. So let's do P5.
On P5, my amendment is to delete and Native American, African American, and descendants of immigrants who?
Second.
Okay. So now do we understand that effect?
And actually communities as well.
I think you need the word who to continue the sentence, who have been disproportionately. So the word who would stay.
So delete and Native American, African American, and descendants of immigrants.
Yeah.
And keep who?
All right.
Second.
So let's take a vote on that amendment.
Second.
All right, let's vote on that.
Aye.
So, Commissioner Fish, I really appreciate your leadership on this and your willingness to have these difficult conversations. Keeping sovereign tribes in, I think, does honor what the Planning Sustainability Commission was intending to note, that is different, and so I appreciate this amendment. Aye.
Hales.
All right. Okay, so now let's vote to accept P5 as amended.
Fish.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Hale.
All right. Okay, now back to P9.
And you're saying just keep, Commissioner, you're planning that we would make the changes in this one.
Yes, because it's a definitional. And I think you have more latitude in defining it, but the term communities of color controls.
So you would, so you, I move removing all the underlined language in 2.1b, right?
I don't.
That's not what you want to do?
No, I don't see a need to.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I'm not following.
Because it includes, including, so communities of color is the general.
Oh, right, okay.
And if in the definition, we just, it says it includes, I have no core, I'm agnostic on that.
Okay, so you're okay with the language as is now.
Yes.
Is there, from a staff question here, is there a question of commas and semicolons or structure of that in terms of which is the general and which is the specific?
I would happily defer to the staff to work that out.
In terms of grammar, I'm not sure if you're saying communities of color includes the whole subsequent list or that including phrase ends somewhere. If you can follow what I'm saying.
Communities of color, including those whose families have been in this area for generations, such as in descent, low-income populations, limited English proficient communities, and other underserved and underrepresented communities.
And if I might further add, now that we're looking at that, instead of Native American communities, which is already covered above there, if we could add immigrants and refugees?
Fine. By saying including, it is meant to be illustrative, and we have more flexibility.
Right.
Above, we created a redundancy,
right.
which created some confusion in my reading. I would accept that as a friendly amendment.
Okay. So with that friendly amendment of adding immigrants and refugees to the list after limited English proficient communities,
and that makes it clear that immigrants and refugees are included in consideration of communities of color, whether in fact they are Caucasian or not. Thank you.
Okay. Further discussion? Let's take a vote on that policy as further amended.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Ritz.
I want to thank everybody in the community, in various commissions and parts of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, my staff. This may seem like a wording issue, it's obviously hugely important. And thank you to Deborah and your team and everybody who's spent a lot of time on getting this right. Thank you, Commissioner Fish, for your assistance. Aye.
Thanks. Colleagues. Oh, sorry.
Aye. That's all right.
Go ahead. Could we interrupt proceedings to recognize a visiting dignitary?
Of course.
We have here with us today Kirk Bloodsworth, who was wrongly convicted of murder. Was the first, I believe, the first person released from death row. Actually, I think you weren't at death row anymore, but by DNA evidence, and has been a crusader against the death penalty and for those wrongly convicted. And he's an old friend of colleague of my wife, Rachel's, and it's great to have him here.
Welcome. Nice to have you here. All right. Okay, let's move on, right? Courtney's back. Are you ready?
I can be.
All right, let's go back there before we forget what we were doing.
Did you vote on the?
Yes, we did.
We did P9, so we have two left on the schedule, Mayor.
Let's do those and then come back.
We have that momentum. I hate to interrupt.
We'll come back
to the last one. And we'll actually have a break before our next hearing.
Hey, what a concept. I move to adopt policy amendment P8.
Second.
Discussion.
Commissioner Fish, didn't you have a suggestion to add the word neighborhoods back in?
Well, I'm trying to read my own handwriting here. So, Jamie, could I talk to you for a second?
Communities covers neighborhoods.
Promotes, communities, organizations, neighborhood associations, business associations. That's pretty close.
I don't know. To me, it seems that if you say neighborhood associations without saying neighborhoods, the assumption is that neighborhood associations are always completely represented in their neighborhood, which is not true.
Well, that's an incorrect assumption, so we don't. Okay.
Well, so let me just pose the question. The existing language of neighborhoods and businesses is, as I understand it, meant to be very broad in application. There are neighborhood associations and business associations in parts of the city that purport to speak for businesses and neighborhoods. But by using the words neighborhoods and businesses, the original language was intended to be broader in scope. Is that correct?
That was originally.
And what's the counter argument for limiting it to either neighborhood associations or business associations?
The city has had a recognized system of neighborhood associations for over 30 years, and that's part of our structure.
Well, so I'm thinking out loud, but the Is it also not our value that we welcome comment from a business or a neighborhood member, whether or not they participate through their association? And if by stating it more broadly as neighborhoods and businesses, aren't we including within that the associations as well as unaffiliated members, in which case we're giving the broadest possible berth to comment, to we're sanctioning the broadest possible participation?
I believe we need to honor our existing structures, including Venture Portland and the business associations that are associated with them. Individuals covers neighbors and business owners who are testifying for them.